Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome, everybody, to the CDO Matters podcast. I believe this is the 46th episode of the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Wherever and whenever you are joining us, I am Malcolm Hawker, your host of CDO Matters podcast. I'm also the head of data strategy with Prophecy Software. I am honored to be joined today by Lulit Tesfayet, who is a principal at Enterprise Knowledge, which is a consultancy based out of DC that is doing some really cool stuff related to what I will call next generation semantic layers. We're going to dive deeply into that topic today and probably touch on a few other things, maybe course AI. We'll probably touch on maybe the data fabric, because I kind of think that some of the stuff that Lulit and team are doing sounds a lot fabric-y to me. But that'll be the topic of conversation today. Lulit, welcome. Glad you could be here.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Malcolm.
Awesome. Well, let's dive into it. Describe for me. So we met, I think, in person in LA last year at an Enterprise Data World conference, mm-hmm. where you and your partner Joe were presenting, and I was in the audience, you know, doing the things that I usually do in an audience but I was really kind of taken with some of the subjects that you were talking about. I did actually really appreciate you had an interesting approach at the beginning of your presentation where you like polled the audience and said, what do you want to hear about, which is a different perspective. But why don't you go and start with, like, tell us what you think a next generation semantic layer is, and tell us some of the things that you've been working on and some of the problems you've been solving.
Perfect. Well, that was a cool conference, and I'm looking forward to the one in Orlando here where you are. But it was great meeting you then, and I know we've had a few interactions afterwards. So semantic layer, to your point, is not something new. I like how you added next gen to it, actually, because it kind of brings to light what has changed throughout the years with, you know, advancements in cloud computing technologies and obviously AI. But to simply define it, a semantic layer is really a shift in focus from the data itself to the knowledge and semantics of data. So metadata, the descriptive data about data. And it's that abstraction layer that allows us to contextualize, categorize, connect your data without having to physically move it in one location. So what I've seen throughout my career, I've been in this space in some shape or form for over 15 years. And I think you have experienced it this too. Over the last decade, there's been a lot of move to the data lakes, the data warehouse, and now cloud migrations. I think we have lived through the pains of those. And what's happening now, or over the past 5 years specifically, is this realization that getting your data physically co-located doesn't really answer the business questions or the insights that you're looking for. Understanding what data you have, how this customer database is related to the products that they own in another database, the marketing content that's associated with it. So this silo persevered. So a semantic layer is, Gartner actually dubbed this back in 2021, end of 2020 timeframe, as the data fabric layer. That was when it got that branding. But before that, you know, semantics has been around for decades, right? The semantic web, the framework of metadata standardization, taxonomies, ontologies, and we can talk about what is within a semantic layer. But at the end of the day, it is really about bringing all your knowledge assets together. I think the slight distinction between the data fabric to a certain level, or you can call it a semantic data fabric, is that focus with on the context and the meaning and the metadata of data. So as the first class citizen being metadata.
So what, let's say I am a healthcare organization, right? We can just focus on healthcare because I know that scenario where you're focused. Or maybe I'm a large government entity. We could do that too. But let's say that I'm a large healthcare organization and I've got data on my patients and my providers, and I've got all this data is sitting in all of these various silos, and I spend a lot of money to move it all into some cloud, right? Doesn't matter. Pick a cloud. And now I'm trying to do something. What can't I do that I need this next generation semantic layer to do? Like you're talking about knowledge, right? And access to knowledge, which there's a subtle difference there between data or even information and knowledge, right? If you follow the DIKW, data, information, knowledge, wisdom.
Yeah.
The use of the word knowledge, I think, is purposeful here. But describe for me the things that as a large healthcare provider that I would be able to do, the value that I'd be able to drive that I couldn't do before.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We actually have a few case studies in the healthcare space. To give you examples of the applications or specific problems that they're going after. So for one organization that's a trainer in the healthcare space, education provider or continuing education provider, they have over 90% of the US market share in this space. So their audience or their customers are doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals that are in different clinical settings. And their primary use case was targeted or personalized training. And they have the challenge of their training materials that is stored in their learning management system or their course content that's in different locations, 3 or 4 learning management systems. They have data about their audience, their customers in their CRM. And then they have the different products that they buy from other firms that they acquire to supplement their courseware, some products and offerings. So the challenge that they were faced with is how do we personalize this content so that a nurse in a hospital versus a nurse in a living home that's supporting seniors has in the state of Florida or in the state of DC have different requirements for training. So it was costing them a lot of money because they were manually aggregating this content from these different sources. And the key here is I think you talked about the way of thinking about knowledge and data and information and content. We can spend days talking about those things, but the line is really blurring. When it comes to like the business user, they don't care if it's structured data, unstructured data, semi-structured data. In this specific use case, it's personalization, right? Like I would like things on demand at the time of my need. My certification is about to expire. I want the solution to understand that what I need to do a continuing education and get certified. So this is one primary use case that leveraged a semantic layer, kind of that aggregate as an aggregator of this content that's kind of spread out. It brought context through metadata on the structured data to connect this nurse to this content. And it categorized and labeled the unstructured data using AI, right? So natural language processing, text extraction, and entity extraction, and to be able to categorize it, give it some sort of structure for the machine or the recommendation engine to understand. And as you would imagine, the user here is that recommendation engine, which looks at the persona or the profile of the individual who is in the system and is now able to recommend the relevant content that they need either to act on immediately or recommend things that, you know, products that they would want to upsell them on.
So how much do knowledge graphs play into this? Because it's, I keep hearing relationships and I keep hearing context. Is that a big part of what's going on here?
So in this use case, a knowledge graph was powering that understanding of the relationships between the customer, the clinical setting, the course content, the state, the different components that are related, but not all semantic layers require a knowledge graph. A good example of this is, we're currently working with an organization that is standardizing its data and its data lake by defining kind of the upper logic for how their data is structured using metadata, and also defining the taxonomies and the business glossaries of their metadata to get aligned on, when we say revenue in this database, it means revenue as HR defines it, or it means something else. So there's no graph in this scenario where the semantic layer is more providing standardization.
So that, to me, what you just described without the graph sounds like, you know, classic semantic layer, right? Like schema level linking or table level linking, revenue here, revenue here, revenue here, revenue here. They're all revenue, but they may have different names or different labels or different metadata within each of the repositories, and a classic semantic layer would figure out a way to link those all together so you can have one query and pull back all the data into a single query instead of 15 queries. Agreed? That's like classic semantic layer stuff.
I think it would even take it a little further. In this use case, their challenge is they have data products that are using a revenue data set. And they're having a hard time understanding which revenue data set was used for this data product, right? So because each team is creating their own version of that. So what this is doing is standardizing their data products too. Like, what is fit for purpose? Like, if it's labeled appropriately using this metadata, then this is the source data that you should use. So
it sounds almost like a reference data use case to me.
Exactly. It's also serving that standardization of like how each team defines a data product, for instance.
Okay. Describes a data product. So this, I find all this rather interesting because the lines start to get a little blurry, not entirely, but a little, with my beloved MDM and where there's overlap between kind of reference data use cases and MDM use cases, and they're both the same. Establishing a reference data source for revenue, or saying this is how we define revenue. I mean, that's a classic MDM use case. But I think what's different is that beyond reference data, you know, in MDM, to create a single version of the truth, you're typically talking about multiple variables, multiple sources, multiple definitions at an object and field level and not a schema level. And that's historically how I've kind of driven the distinction between MDM and classic data, you know, a classic semantic layer. Would you agree?
I agree. In fact, in some of our use cases, MDM is one of the supported solutions within a semantic layer. So in that space, you know, because and there's another one is the product PIM, a product information management solution that kind of is in tandem. Those are somewhat our customers' solutions or applications for that semantic layer that support the application of a semantic layer.
So in the, whether it's the healthcare example or other examples, so you're running this magic analysis, right? That shows all of these relationships, maybe that you did, maybe you knew, but maybe you didn't know. I mean, that to me is one of the wonders of graph, which is it's the unknown knowns, right? The knowns are, you know, there's relationships between your customers, or you know, there's relationships between your products and your customers or your locations or your whatevers. You know, they're there. You just don't know what they are. Once you run this, what are the consuming applications of that insights beyond analytical platforms? Are they being consumed by custom applications that you're building on top of the semantic layers? Are they being consumed by CRM systems? What system is consuming these insights and surfacing them to end users so they can make decisions? Or maybe it's even AI that's consuming them. What's happening?
Yeah, I love this question. I like to look at that in kind of two tracks. One is the business end user applications. Like, search is the most common user of this layer in the form of faceting when you're using metadata and taxonomies, in the form of like the knowledge panel that you get when you search for something. I think the Google knowledge panel is the easy one to recognize. A lot of organizations have their own version of that for their internal content. So search, dashboards, the Tableaus, the Power BIs, these analytics dashboards are the second, I would say, from use cases perspective that we've seen. The other third is AI. AI in the form of, and I know that's like a catch-all phrase. So if I break it down, the recommendation engine that I talked about earlier, providing context and machine-readable tacit knowledge to a certain level or machine-readable relationships to AI to recommend personalization. The other is supporting AI, Gen AI from hallucinations. That's something that we've been working through over the past year with the industry calls it RAG, just augmenting it with your contextual information. So AI is becoming actually a primary user of this to avoid hallucinations, but also even to contextualize Gen AI, large language models, because large language models are good in English or whatever language they're trained on. They know how to predict the next best term, but they don't understand that credit for a bank means something different than credit for a coffee company. So contextualizing that information when you're in augmenting that LLM to your information is the other application. So I see two tracks because there are visible, clickable end user applications, but there are also back end technical support. There's a schema.org approach where in some organizations we just publish, here's your standardized taxonomy, ontology, metadata, and departments grab it. We've done this for a financial institution where their credit card department needed to standardize how they write account numbers. Simple data quality, but that's but it's also managed through a data catalog, right? And the metadata is defining this primary metadata as applicable to everybody within the organization. Secondary for a group in a department, and then the third level is just a wild west. People can do whatever they want, but like some sort of governance.
So let's I want to pick on that RAG example just very briefly. Because I see this one being the most, what's the word? Operable? Is that even a word? Implementable, operationalizable, something, right? Where I'm a CDO of a mid-sized company. We haven't invested in data science at all, right? Like we don't have, you know, the team of data scientists. Maybe we're a manufacturing company. It doesn't matter, but we just haven't got there from a data science perspective. We didn't want to pay 400 grand for somebody to go and do science experiments. But I do want to operationalize AI. I want to find ways to operationalize some of these insights. And I have use cases that could maybe well align to Gen AI, but I'm trying to figure out a way to get more predictive, insightful, accurate, consistent responses from LLMs. And what I've been saying for a year plus now is like, hey, use these RAG patterns, right? Constrain the LLM with a known fact set. And what you're saying here is that the output of the things that you've been working on, these next gen semantic layers, could be used for that very purpose. But help a Luddite here understand how I go from, you know, being able to run GraphQL or being able to run some sort of query against some sort of data set to pull back the knowledge. Right. Like say that, you know, here's all the things that I know about my customers. Here's all the relationships with my customers. Here's how this customer is related to this customer. How is that insight getting into a prompt? Right. Is there somebody on the application side that's building some sort of custom copilot or custom chatbot or something typically in the kind of CTO organizations of these companies to consume that?
Yeah, so where we have had success in a couple of case studies with this is in the search realm. Again, if you take the search front end out, that's easier for people to understand. So I'd like to explain it that way. But you can imagine this without search. You can plug in whatever application you're looking for. But because search is what we know and are familiar with, let me explain it that way. So if you're looking to augment your LLM with the RAG approach, you don't, so it's all vectors, right? Like you're pulling in information and vectorizing structured, unstructured data in a form that it's machine readable, that AI can make predictive or prescriptive or analytical decisions and generate a response. That process does not change. Where the graph or the semantic layer, and I would say graph in this scenario, context comes in is once you, an AI has reached a decision, it comes in, it goes into the graph and looks for additional information. So in the search scenario, it's like you have your typical indexing, right? This is one simple architecture that I'm going through. It's going there to contextualize, do I know anything else about this thing, this data point in the graph to filter further and can make a better accurate recommendation? And this gets into the scoring. There's a thing called semantic pathways. If I'm looking for something and if it's closer to this thing than this thing, then this thing is the right response. So you would pull in that. So there's a little bit of logic, the point of graph being, but a simple way of thinking about it is that way. I know we're a little bit in the architectural weeds, but it's like they work in tandem. You'll get your results either way, but when you add the context with a graph and you're querying a graph to support your search results, that's when the effect or the impact of the semantic layer comes into play with AI.
So just, I do want to ask one more question, but it's like really high level, really philosophical, and our listeners will probably be wondering why I stopped in Crazy Town. But I'm prone to stop in Crazy Town. It seems to me like with a lot of this AI related stuff, let's just loosely call it AI related stuff, this technology was all built on natural language. At least not all AI, of course not. But let's focus on Gen AI, let's focus on LLMs, because that's kind of what's front of mind for a lot of people right now. And I do actually believe that LLMs will be how most companies operationalize AI at scale, right? It'll be the easiest, lowest drag way for companies to check the AI box and actually drive a lot of value from AI. The creation of these LLMs was all done on natural language. It was like let's take the internet, right? Like, this is just mind-boggling to me. Like, let's take 7 billion parameters out of the internet, or in the case of the latest version of BART, I think it was 70 billion. Mind-blowing numbers here. But this was all from written language, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems to me, and everything we've been doing for the last 40 years is largely, not exclusively, of course, especially not in the last 10 years, but was primarily rows and columns, right? Classic relational stuff, rows and columns. And those are two very different ways of representing, capturing data. And everything you just described to me seems, at least from the vector perspective and the graph perspective, in terms of like, I need to give this thing specific food. Right, it needs a diet that it can consume, right? And the best diet for it is to take things out that were in rows and columns and add the context that it needs to make more intelligent decisions. Or okay, you're nodding. I'm not totally nuts. Well, I may be, but at least you're nodding. Do you see a future where in like from a business application perspective, we start to evolve maybe away a little bit, not entirely, because I think rows and columns have a time and place, right? From a consistency perspective, from a rollback perspective, from an audit and control perspective. But do you see a place in the future where we're starting to store more data just as natural language instead of classic rows and columns?
That is a hard question to answer, but I don't think it's a crazy question. And I could see the possibility. I would say that because I think we were, if you think about it, the human brain does not think in rows and columns. We were forced to think that way because of limitations in systems. So in a way, we changed our behavior to work with Excel. From processing information perspective. So I don't see any reason why, and this is why I keep saying the rows and columns, the structured data and the unstructured is really blurring, is if we have the capacity and the technical maturity as industry, and I don't think this has been answered fully even in any industry, but to think like the neural network way humans process and think information, that we are now trying to turn into that machine intelligence version of that, then absolutely. I mean, I think we're ways from that for,
for
many enterprises and organizations. But I agree with you. I think at the end of the day, the whole concept of like this graph thinking is, I know I work in at enterprise knowledge, for instance, right? But there's no way for a machine to know that if we don't give it enough information, because I work in enterprise knowledge, I'm an expert in what I do in semantic layers in a graph. But you could deduce, you can infer that by just your neural network brain of way of thinking, right? So it's the ability to encode that to your systems and your machines. I don't think tables are allowing us to do, unless you write a lot of joins. I mean, you can make it happen, right, but it will require a lot of script, very rigid way of running, you know, a query.
So we were both recently together at an event in Austin, albeit very briefly. And I went to dinner with a bunch of very smart people in the data world, arguably far smarter than I am. And I asked the question, this was a beer question. And sometimes those are the most insightful. Maybe they're the most crazy.
I love those conversations. Yeah.
But I asked the question of, do we see a world where we see the boundaries or the differences between operational data stores and analytical data stores going away? And it was pretty interesting because there were like half of the people were like, yeah. And the other half were, no way, physically impossible. You're breaking the laws of physics. And which was way over my head and way over my pay grade. I mean, I understand about throughput concerns. I understand about, you know, needing structure in order to optimize from a compute perspective. But I was intrigued by this very idea, because I think if you try to trace back a lot of our biggest challenges in the data world, it stems from the fact that we have operational use cases and analytical use cases, and we try to make them play nice together when they're not designed to play nice together, per se. What do you think about my question? Is that one crazy too?
That's a tough one, because not only laws of physics, but also there's organizational dynamics and politics and how corporates are set up, right? And I think, and this is actually a very, if you ask me what's top of mind for many organizations, that especially the large corporations that we consult with, the challenging part is not this hypothetical. They're not worried about operations and, you know, the operational analytical conversation. It's more about the politics of like who gets to deliver the insight first, right? Who is protective? Because we are set up in a way where CDO did not exist if we were having this conversation a few years back. So it's the natural, I guess, gravitational force of industry and the changes in technology forced it. It is, I guess, it's really hard for me to say or predict that. It really depends on who shows the value first and who is allowed to have access to data, the right amount of data, but most of all is able to get buy-in. Internally, because that's where all projects go to die.
Probably. Well, right. And it's so interesting. I think back to the first time I ever tried to do MDM, which, I mean, I want to say is almost 20 years ago, which is crazy. The longest pull at the beginning of our initiative was access. Like, just access. Right, like
we spend a lot of time in
having to that your point, policy. Right? Like the fiefdoms and the politics of that's mine and don't touch it.
Yeah, that's still a challenge, and it's justified, right? There is security reasons that obviously policies that we have to abide by, but yeah, there is some of that, like a territorial
there's a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of that. And that in and of itself could be a deal killer, but it gives me job security, because as long as there are silos, there will be a need to pay somebody to break them. And then I can help with that. So maybe that's not necessarily bad for me, but just kind of getting back to this idea of, you know, operational use cases versus analytical use cases. I started thinking more about this ever since Microsoft launched what they're calling their fabric, which I would argue doesn't really kind of look like the stuff that you're working on per se. It's not opposed to it. I would say it's kind of a foundational layer sitting underneath everything that you're trying to do. But when I think about conceptually what they've done, and this is a conceptual view, is maybe a strong word, but I think it's accurate, is I think that they in many ways have kind of commoditized or at least virtualized the differences that exist in between database management systems, right? I could have file-based storage over here. I could have graph over here. I could have classic rows and columns. I could have whatever, MongoDB over here. Yep. It doesn't matter. And I can write a single query that will work across all of them. And I could run a single SQL query against all. I could run a SQL query against MongoDB. I could do anything. And it's not necessarily solving for the definitional issues that a classic semantic layer that would solve for, like a single definition. But at the very least, from an access and query perspective, if you know what you're going for. And like that to me is when I think about that, it's like, okay, warehouse lake, right? If I got one query and it doesn't matter, does it even make a difference of rows and columns versus NoSQL? I think to the purists and to the kind of the laws of physics thing, I think the answer is yes, right? Because if you're building for speed and if you're building for volume, all right, I'll get off of this one.
I like this, and I have an example for you where we had a similar scenario when partnering with one of the big four consultancies. We were supporting their graph. Semantic layer work, a portion of their use case had a graph, a portion didn't. But why I go there is there are use cases that are better served in a relational form. Yeah. There are use cases that have analytics. So to give you the case study for this one, this firm is looking to consult its clients on ESG impact, so carbon footprint. And what they're looking to calculate is if I am shipping this dongle from, you know, point A to point B, how much carbon footprint is it going to cost me, depending on the material I use to manufacture this mouse and to package it, and what route should I take to ship it? All of this, you can imagine there's a lot of data that's coming from different places, some transactional, some supply chain. There's a lot going on. And the way we architected this was three-pronged approach, which touches on all of them, I think, what you were asking for. One is reliant on the semantic layer. We're using the UN taxonomy and metadata for environmental impact, the definitions, you know, the metadata that's required to contextualize the structured data that they have in their data lake, and also unstructured data. They have all three, right? Like this is the environment we're working in. So that's where the semantics came into play. The other for analytics, doing the actual min max, you know, how do you calculate, measure that? That was purely analytics. The graph did not need to be involved because performance is going to be a big issue. So that's outside your traditional analytics way of dealing with that. When it's rendered to the user, though, the user doesn't see any of this. It's a dashboard that they already had that's plugged in. They select a few parameters. If I use this manufacturing material, this shipping equipment, and this route, CO2 calculation, similar to what Google is doing now on, you know, if you take this flight or if you take this flight. So I in two ways, I think, they can coexist. There is a use case for all of them. But for them, I think the biggest thing that the semantic layer answered is one, interoperability of their data, because it's semantic standards based. They're using external taxonomies, right? They can use that. They don't need to reinvent the wheel for environment sustainability, defining the matrix and parameters.
So you just touched on it. Yeah. Like yeah. you just nailed it. I'm sorry to interrupt. You just oh, no, touched please. On it, which is like a single overarching use case, which is maybe complete visibility of the life cycle or of the supply chain of something of the dongle, right? Like I want to see exactly. across the entire thing. I want to see if I'm doing business with, you know, companies that are operating ethically or within the confines of the law or whatever it is. But that's the overarching use case. I want visibility across the supply chain, for example. Yep. But within that use case, there's relational data, there's GraphQL, there's a whole bunch of other things, and they all need to play well together. This is what you just said.
Exactly. And that's I don't think we should demand it any other way. At the end of the day, the goal is to provide insights, answer questions, allow interoperability. I would emphasize one of the biggest things I am a proponent on because of the semantic layer is standards. The ability to ingest and publish data, exchange data internally within this system, that system, the future system that you don't know about. It's the core value of the semantic layer in the primary use case. If you're in healthcare, for instance, or financial regulations where you have requirements for Open Data Act, then interoperability is key, and abstracting your data from systems is the key value add for the use case for where we would strongly push for a semantic layer solution.
So we agree. I mean, I've been using the phrase data fabric. But I think that's okay. And I think I think it's appropriate. Data fabric encompasses everything you've said. I'll be honest and say that when I think mostly about data fabric, and this is just my internal bias, I think more about, and this isn't, I need to break this way of thinking, but I tend to lean more towards data management use cases where we could actually use the fabric to build rules or understand knowledge about the data itself and about how the data should be structured and how the data should relate to each other. But to me, the real money here, and this is one of the things that I got excited about by listening to your presentation in Los Angeles, was that focus on like business use cases, whether it was the healthcare one that you're talking about or the product one you're just talking about, because that's what's going to move the needle forward here. Because frankly, you know, data management use cases tend to put people to sleep. But it's really cool.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. What's really cool is actually over the past 6 months, we are seeing the data team coming to us with, we've tried to put together a data fabric layer. And that's actually the big push why this year we're defining, because the semantic layer is the same exact reason, Malcolm. You're not the only one who thinks about it that way. I think we all have been thinking about it that way. And the reason why I updated the article that I published in 2020 about a semantic layer now is this. This is the driver. AI, the natural language way of thinking about data and structured data, but also the data team is getting to a point where they need contextual information. They've done a lot of the experimentation, the analytics. The business is excited.
I'll give you another one. Because I just had this come over my transom this morning where I had to do a little bit of research and come up with kind of an internal position on it pretty quickly, which is and you touched on this already with your product use case. So the European Union in 2022 passed something generally known as product passports, where by 2026, starting with a limited number of products, they're going to start with batteries, but they're going to get into multiple products into the future, where in the European Union, you will need to publish a passport on consumer goods that shows things like the supply chain, shows things like sourcing, shows things like where did it come from, who made it, what's the supply chain. And I actually think that this is going to become a huge thing really, really quickly in consumer goods, including in the United States, even when it's not regulated or not required, because I think there are people that would happily pay a little more money to know the name of the person that picked the orange they're about to eat. I mean, that may sound like kind of like, really, they're going to pay more. But yeah, I would pay more to know that person who picked the orange actually gets paid a living wage.
Yeah. No, I mean, that traceability. And imagine that with AI generated results.
Right.
You're trying to figure out where did this come from? you're also ingesting data, if you're talking about supply chain, from numerous places, right? This organization is reporting on something, another subscription that you're getting from a data mart somewhere within an industry. There are so many, data is getting globalized. I guess let me put it that way. And I think that having your data vendor locked is a thing of the past, a monolithic solution thing of the past, right? It is metadata and your ability to align on the connection of your metadata, your data using metadata is, I think, the way to go. I love that use case. My mind is racing right now about how this is going to come to fruition because it's all data.
Well, and it's not just your data. The game changer here is data that is being shared across complex data ecosystems or supply chains. Give you an example. Whatever year this was, maybe it's 2022, 2021, I don't know. One ship gets plugged in the Suez Canal for like a month and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And the entire global economy is brought to its knees because there was no recognition, no understanding of what the second and third and fourth degree impacts were of that one ship. Right.
That's like, a great example. Yeah.
Right. Like, so you talk about knowledge. And you talk about context and you talk about complex relationships. Like if I'm a car manufacturer and I have got brake pads that are sitting on that ship and I've got production lines that are about to end or stop, but I don't know it because my contract is not with the producer of the brake pads. They're with the component producer that puts the brake pads together in an entire thing, right? So it's a second or a third degree relationship, but I'm going to want to know that and I'll pay to know that. And the stuff that you're working on is exactly that. But it's not just the data sitting in your four walls. It's data outside your walls as well. And that's where things start to get really, really interesting to me is do we start to cooperate a little bit more? I know in the supply chain world, there's been, particularly in the shipping world, Maersk was tinkering with this with IBM. They were looking at things that were blockchain enabled. I'm a believer in blockchain. I think there's something interesting there for kind of more peer-to-peer sharing of data, where instead of a vector, maybe it is a ledger. I'm totally thinking left field here. I don't know. But the things that you're working on, like understanding these complex relationships, like to me, that's whether it's understanding a supply chain as a consumer or whether it's understanding supply chain as a manufacturer or something, like there's nothing but goodness there.
Yeah. And to add to your point about sharing data, some companies are productizing it. So standardized data as a product. A veterinary recently did this, one of our clients, where they standardized just like definitions of like vets, medication, healthcare terms, naming conventions. And they offer that as a product to veterinaries that are starting their practice, for instance, and buying in all these data management processing whatever solutions. It was a standard data model, a standardized metadata ontologies for relationships, taxonomies for hierarchical relationships and descriptions, and they are generating revenue from that, providing it to industry. So there is value out there. The financial firms that we work with are kind of at the forefront, primarily because they are required by, the Fair Data Act. They have a lot of regulatory requirements to exchange data. So there's a lot of lessons to be taken that we've taken that to the healthcare, to supply chain, to some industries that we're working with. But I don't think that future is far. I think we have a handful of companies that are seeing the value and monetizing that even.
That's a great place to wrap up. I think we could keep talking about this for hours and hours. I know I could, especially when you start to get into data sharing and creating the economic models around it. When you're monetizing, okay, that's interesting. What I think is more interesting is give to get. And where the get is not money per se, and that's okay. I'll take your money if you want to hand it to me and I'll give you data in exchange. But maybe what I get back is another data set on something that is equally interesting. Another. Yeah, like to me, right? Like this
that
is
data exchange bar.
Yeah. Well, this is yeah. I worked at a company called Dun & Bradstreet for almost a decade, where that was their core model is you give us data, we'll give you insight on credit risk of other companies, and it's a consortium. So I think that there may be something there as well. If you're part of a complex supply chain, monetizing the data, yeah, but maybe we find a way to share it so that we all benefit somehow, some way. I don't know. I could keep brainstorming for
There's so many opportunities.
Oh my gosh, for hours and hours. Lula, thank you so much. This is awesome. Where can people get in touch with you and learn more about what you're doing?
So I'm on LinkedIn, my full name as the extension for that. Also with Enterprise Knowledge, if you go to our website, my contact information is there as well. And I can share through you as well.
Awesome. Good stuff. Thank you so much for your time. For our listeners, for our viewers, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the CDO Matters podcast. Really, really appreciate your engagement. If you could take the time to subscribe or like the content, we always appreciate that. And I will see you on another episode of the CDO Matters podcast sometime very soon. Thanks all. Bye for now.